This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to The Hindu's In Focus podcast. My name is Jayant Sriram and I'm your host for today. In this episode, we continue our state-by-state analysis of this set of assembly elections currently underway, and we look at Tamil Nadu, which goes to vote on April 6. We often frame the question for each state in terms of what has changed politically since the last assembly election in 2016, and nowhere has the change been as dramatic or as seismic even as in Tamil Nadu, where the intervening years saw the passing away of the DMK's M. Karunanidhi and the AIADMK's J. Jayalalitha. Between them, for decades, the two held such an iron grip on the respective party structures and the state's politics, and in the power vacuum that has naturally ensued since their passing, is there an opportunity now for change and for a new kind of political paradigm to emerge? That is the question and the dynamic that characterizes this election in the state. And to discuss it further, I'm joined by The Hindu's associate editor, Narayan Lakshman. Narayan, welcome back to the In Focus podcast. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks. Great to be here, Jayant.
Right. So we're discussing the Tamil Nadu assembly polls. And, you know, as we're doing these preview episodes for each state, we try and get a sense of what's changed since the last time the state went to polls. That's in 2016. And, you know, dynamics are different in each state, but you could arguably say, I think with good reason, that nowhere is the shift as tectonic between the last election and this one as it is in Tamil Nadu. In the preceding years, we've lost two towering leaders who've sort of dominated the state's politics for decades. That's Karunanidhi and Jayalalitha. And so, you know, that whole concept of leadership, political leadership, is an issue that looms over this whole election. And in a piece that you've written for The Hindu most recently, which we'll post along with this podcast, of course, you kind of frame it helpfully as a question of inheritance. You know, how has each party, the two major parties, the DMK and the AIADMK, how have they dealt with this question of inheriting that political leadership? Because the structure in each case was a bit iffy. Let's just start with that question. How have the two parties dealt with this question of inheritance of political leadership?
Absolutely. I think, your question goes to the very heart of what is churning in Tamil Nadu politics today. And I also agree that it's one of the states that's had the most dramatic shifts in the very ecosystem that is prevalent since the last election, as you said, 2016. So I think, look, the changes that have happened, the disappearance from the stage of Jayalalitha and Karunanidhi really throws into highlight the kind of party leadership that we've had for the best part of half a century. So let's look at each party. So on the AIADMK side, you always had very charismatic leaders. It was initially MG Ramachandran, who split off from the DMK after his own clashes with erstwhile DMK leader Karunanidhi, and formed the AIADMK, built it up very rapidly and almost explosively on the sheer power of his cinematic sort of magnetism. And that happened he entered government in 1977 as chief minister. And since then, of course, he handed the mantle over of leadership to Jayalalitha, who again, not only was, you could call, his protege, but also had a similar background in the sense of used her very deep experience and, popularity through cinema to really put across her political message as a propagandistic device. So I think the party, in terms of the leadership character, had that deep enmeshing with the cinema industry. And therefore, you can understand that in a state where cinema has played a very powerful role in the whole makeup of the state, the Dravidian movement, for many, many decades, these two leaders had very far reach. And at the same time, there was a parallel sort of features that went with these two leaders of the AIADMK. And that is that, you know, they completely undercut any sense of democratic practice within the party cadre. And even whatever structures, you know, councils and so forth were created within the AIADMK were in name only. And at the end of the day, whether, you know, a small decision down at some village or district level up to macro decisions at the state level, they were all made only by one person under the ADMK, under MGR as well as Jayalalitha. That is just the way the party was. And my point to bring that first part of the story to an end is to say that what has happened with the disappearance of Jayalalitha from the scene is that the party is facing an unprecedented change where it is having to answer very uncomfortable questions about the ability of the remaining leaders today to command and to hold together and consolidate the party, not allow it to fragment and indeed fend off the most dramatic challenges that it faces from both the DMK, its very long-time rival, but even more from other regional parties. And even internally, though, they have aligned with the BJP to find that balance of give and take between Dravidian politics and Hindutva politics. So for all of those things, the way that an MGR or a Jayalalitha would have dealt with it is quite different from what the current crop of leadership in the AIADMK is able to do right now. And that's the huge question mark hanging over their heads as they go into this very interesting election. So let's now jump to the other side of the fence, which is the DMK, and look at the leadership question there. They have had certainly a relatively more structured passing of the mantle. They had a business continuity plan, if you will, succession planning. And the party cadre very quickly coalesced around M.K. Stalin as the anointed head of the DMK during his father's time. Although the interesting footnote there, Jayant, is that his father, despite being extremely, you know, ailing and very advanced age, he did not actually hand over the reins of power to Stalin while he was still alive, which leaves not just us, but I'm sure the people of the state, the voters, with a little bit of a question mark. And so this is the challenge that Stalin will continue to face, even though he has the advantage of being a legitimate heir of Karunanidhi. The challenge being, will voters believe that he actually has the spurs, the credentials to pull off a state assembly election victory? He did deliver in 2019, where the DMK swept the Lok Sabha elections and delivered a rich crop of seats. But not so in 2016, where Stalin was playing a key role already. So for him, it is really about, it's almost even more severe challenge that the ADMK leaders face, because it's really make or break. The ADMK leaders, Edappadi Palaniswamy and O. Paneerselvam, at least have the last few years of governance record to claim as their own and to stand on that. But Stalin does not have that. And for him, if he fails to deliver on this election, it could well be that he's going to go into political oblivion after this. So let me just leave it at that, and then we can pick apart the threads further from there.
Yeah, right. We'll get to that aspect of good governance that you spoke about, that this perhaps characterized the years in between Jayalalitha passing and Mr. Palaniswamy taking over as chief minister. But just to touch on Mr. Stalin for a moment, like you said, his father delivered, I think, 10 assembly election victories.
Yeah.
That's and he's, as you mentioned, till the very end, there was no actual formal passing on of the mantle. So, you know, he doesn't have an assembly election to claim as his own. Though, you know, riding on the back of perhaps a kind of we'll get to that factor later, but he did, in alliance with the Congress, deliver a pretty strong showing in 2019. Now, this is a fairly recent thing in Indian politics, where we're seeing in a number of states that voters sort of vote for one party who they feel is a better national, a better national choice, and one party that's a better state choice. The choice is it's a bit different in Tamil Nadu, but you've also kind of diagnosed, the fact that voters might prefer to send one of these parties as representatives to Delhi, perhaps to act as a bulwark against what they see as, Delhi sort of trying to dominate South Indian politics.
Right.
And perhaps choose another party in the state which they perceive to have delivered good governance. So could that sort of play out in this case? How do you think that dichotomy might play out?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. And I think you're right to say that some patterns have emerged in this regard. If you look especially from the year 2000 onwards, it almost seems like the voters of the state were very clear in sending the DMK into the Lok Sabha and keeping the AIADMK in power in the state assembly. So, like you said, I think, and the article also argues, it is almost as if this voters seem to believe that the DMK is able to, is the party of choice to offer a pushback against the sometimes heavy-handedness of a centralized centralizing power in the state, in the central government in Delhi. So it's not only particular to the BJP and Hindutva politics, but even in the earlier era of UPA and Congress, there is a sense always in Tamil Nadu that why should we have a remote and distant New Delhi, the netas of New Delhi, why should they be telling the Tamil people and the Tamil voters what to do? Why should they be dictating Hindi policy to us? Why should they be dictating on NEET? Why should they be holding back on the share of taxes that we get, and we should get much more because we contribute more? Why have they not given us more in terms of funds to fight the COVID-19 pandemic when we have actually demonstrated that our bureaucracy is highly capable? So these questions, the interesting fact here that ethnographers look at is that the Dravidian movement is actually built on this sort of willingness to push back on any number of issues. And it was initially, in fact, under the DMK, it was termed as sort of assertive populism. So you are being a populist. You are trying to mobilize people politically in Tamil Nadu on the basis of these claims. But you're doing so on the plank of pushing back. You're pushing back against Hindi dominance, Brahmin dominance, North Indian dominance, all of these things which are seen as threats to the Tamil identity. So your question actually has a very, very deep root, and it goes back to the very sense of Tamil ethnic identity, which was at the heart of the Dravidian movement itself. So in that regard, I think those among the Tamil voters who still have, who feel a sense of Tamil exceptionalism in that way, may be of mind to send the DMK to the Lok Sabha. And those who feel that, look, we are more concerned about the dark side of Dravidian politics, which I've talked about in that piece too, which is to do with the very rampant spread of corruption at all scales, from grand larceny, you know, at the state government level, down to micro corruption and bribe taking and demanding of bribes, which, you know, hampers transactions at the citizen or individual level. The people are in some ways sick of that too. And the change in leadership that we talked about in your previous question could be seen by some voters as an opportunity to allow the formation of a new paradigm where there is less corruption and more focus on governance. And I think it is this sort of push and pull between the sense of Dravidian identity versus the need for good governance that are almost clashing with each other. And this election is going to be a real acid test to see which of those prevails.
Right. So picking up from that aspect of good governance, like I said, a sort of two-pronged question on the AIADMK. So we must point out here that 2016 was a very rare election where, because, you know, before that, anti-incumbency was almost a given. For years and years, correct, the DMK came to power and then the AIADMK, and they would be voted out, spectacularly. So whichever party was in power. Correct. In 2016, the AIADMK retained power. And that was it was largely believed to be on the back of many popular welfare schemes and good governance, like you say. Now, that's one thing that, despite the fact that there was some turbulence when Jayalalitha passed away, the party has seems to have sort of come together around Mr. Palaniswamy, who sort of brokered this peace with O. Paneerselvam. And they have delivered on some level good governance. So, you know, just speak to us a little bit about that record. What's it been like really in the state since that kind of stabilization of power? Because Jayalalitha passed away soon after that 2016 verdict.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was definitely a period of turbulence for the AIADMK. There's no denying that. Like you said, not only was there friction between Edappadi Palaniswamy, the current chief minister, and his deputy, O. Paneerselvam, but it began with actually Sasikala making a claim for the mantle of the party after Jayalalitha's passing. She herself, of course, could not continue to fight that fight because the disproportionate assets scam case, legal case, caught up with her. She and Jayalalitha were actually, Sasikala was found guilty, and Jayalalitha would have been found guilty had she lived. But her passing obviously did not see her any further involved in that case. That case against her was abetted. So I think the point is, this goes back to the former point about a lack of very strong leadership that could have ever flourished under Jayalalitha. Jayalalitha herself, from her autocratic style, and I say that with a sense of, you know, close analysis of how she functioned, absolutely autocratic style of functioning, including, you know, the demand that party members demonstrate their fealty and loyalty by prostrating themselves publicly at her feet. All of that was a very deliberate move to degrade any chance of leadership growing. And that infighting that we saw in the immediate aftermath of her passing was a direct consequence of that. So while, you know, let's say someone like Paneerselvam, he is from Theni district. He is also a Tevar leader in terms of the caste dynamics. And he could have made a much stronger claim to be the genuine sort of legatee of Jayalalitha's mantle. Had he had a greater voice, had he had that sense of chemistry and sense of charisma with the rest of his party. But no, he didn't. Edappadi Palaniswami and indeed so many other leaders who are from represented other caste groups were equally strong counterweights and counterforces against him, as indeed was Sasikala, who was actually outside the party mechanism for all practical purposes. So that tells you how weak all the leadership sort of vectors were within the party. And despite that, all of those leaders benefited from the one thing that Jayalalitha gave them, which was her parting gift of the 2016 assembly election. With that, what they've effectively done for the last 5 years is basically, you know, literally close the doors to all external threats within their party, hold firm after that initial period of turbulence. And that included shutting out TTV Dinakaran also, Sasikala's nephew, who went on to form the AMMK. That included any further sort of cutting into their vote share by newcomers who could potentially enter, including Kamal Hassan and Rajinikanth as other cine stars who are trying to make an entry or who have made an entry, including the BJP itself, which was trying to get a greater footprint. It has only managed to do so by hanging on to the coattails of the AIADMK. So the AIADMK held on to that parting gift of Jayalalitha and has only focused on governance. And to their credit, they have done a very good job of it. The state has been on a relatively more solid base than it was towards even the end of Jayalalitha's reign. You know, there was all the struggle with Jallikattu and all of that. And there was a lot of turbulence over civil disturbances, you know, police violence in the face of protests. All of that, the Sterlite protests and all of that. But since then, there has been peace and harmony for the greatest measure. We've not seen anything kind of rock the boat too much. At the same time, the crisis that have engulfed everyone, like COVID-19, has been very effectively handled. Tamil Nadu is credited as one of those states that has performed extremely well in terms of, you know, the testing and the vaccination program rollout, all of that. So I think the ruling dispensation gets full credit for that. Unfortunately for them, they are still facing their biggest challenge only in the next few days, which is makes this election extremely interesting for the rest of us. And that is that they will have to face up to the external challenge outside of their party. They will have to answer the DMK's very sharp critiques of diluting the Dravidian principles by aligning with the BJP. They will have to answer the very many other parties that actually say, look, you claim to have broken with Jayalalitha's you know, inheritance of corruption, but this is still a very, very corrupt government. You have been seen wanting in so many regards. There are so many opportunities for, say, development and infrastructure that you have missed. There are so many other things that you could have done better, which you failed. So will they be able to answer all that? Will they be able to convince the voters of that? I think that is where, you know, their biggest challenge lies. And you will see the answer in the days ahead.
Right. So, yeah, I think we'll sort of round it off with the AIADMK's alliance with the BJP. Now, the BJP as a whole, now, when you take this whole set of assembly elections, you know, as a you know, in a more holistic sense, it is the big looming question is about the BJP gaining a stronger footprint in areas not traditionally considered its stronghold. Now, it's hard to read what's been the BJP strategy or campaign like in Tamil Nadu in these years. As you say, a lot of it has been hanging on to the coattails of the AIADMK. So it's easier to say in West Bengal, where they've kind of gone all out. The campaign is a lot more vociferous.
Yeah.
But you did mention that, you know, this question of leadership that we spoke about first, you know, the passing of two great leaders creates this gap. And for some, that gap can be perceived as a sort of a, you know, an acceptance of a new kind of politics, perhaps space for a new kind of political alignment. So, again, so what is there a space for the BJP to gain a stronger footprint in Tamil Nadu this time? If ever there was an opening, this time would be it, I suppose.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think one of the biggest learnings of the Dravidian movement itself, you know, is that, you know, there was a much greater emphasis on regional parties, strong regional leaders who represented the language, the culture, and the identity politics of the state. There's a preference for them over any homogenizing national type party, whether the Congress or the BJP. So in a sense, even though you have, of course, the youth voting in this election who may not have voted before, the post-millennials, Generation Z, and so on, and they may not be carrying the echoes of the Dravidian movement and its intellectual memory, or its sort of the inheritance of their fathers and mothers and their grandparents and so on, who spoke about leaders such as Periyar and Annadurai. And of course, then the DMK leader Karunanidhi and MJR of the AIADMK. So they will exercise a greater say in this election. But the, again, fascinating question for sociologists is, does that sense of Tamil exceptionalism and identity still percolate to the youth? And will they be the ones deciding that balance between the call for good governance and the need to protect Tamil identity and the uniqueness of Tamil Nadu politics? So I think in terms of the BJP coming in, the Hindutva challenge is an entirely new one. So over and above the question of good governance, which Prime Minister Narendra Modi, Amit Shah, and all of them, they push the propaganda on that as the party of anti-corruption, as the party that, you know, brought the bureaucracy in line, as the party that is bringing back economic fugitive offenders from abroad, all of that. It is portraying itself as the party of good governance, but it is also portraying itself as the party of muscular Hindutva. So a further complex question for the Tamil Nadu voter is, even if you really want the good governance of the BJP, are you willing to tolerate the saffron politics of the Sangh Parivar along with that as part of a package deal? So that's the other fascinating question that voters will be deciding on, and we will see the outcome of. But like you said, I think the absence of very powerful leaders within the Dravidian fold has certainly made a little more easy pickings available for the BJP. I think in their dream scenario, they may be obviously wanting to perhaps secretly see the eventual weakening of the AIADMK to pick off what remains there and maybe form some sort of a rainbow alliance with them, which is much more permanent than what they have now. For now, anecdotally, at least what we hear is they have been working through their parent organization, the RSS, the same way they have in Bengal, in West Bengal, which is the RSS is very, very quietly and under the radar, percolating through to the village level. And it is quietly spreading the message through organizing, you know, temple events at a very local level, by bringing certain districts together under the umbrella of certain festivals. These very, very subtle cultural iconic messaging that happens. The RSS is brilliant. They've been doing this since 1947 and even probably before in some other party organization form. But they have mastered that art. And the BJP, of course, is the political vehicle that finally capitalizes on that. So I think one should not overestimate the power of Dravidianism to be sort of complacent about what the RSS has been achieving quietly in the villages there. So I would not even rule out a very surprising result for the BJP, maybe even more than what they expected, based on this very quiet propagandistic methods. So I think the BJP is on a solid footing as it will ever be compared to the last several decades. But having said that, they are still fighting, Jayant, against the very, very well-oiled juggernauts of the DMK and the AIADMK, which have mastered the art of fundraising and mobilization since 1967. They have capabilities that exceed probably the best, those of the best known corporates, the Fortune 500 companies of this of the world. So they operate brilliantly at the village level. Of course, as we all know, every election there'll be a whole bunch of vans and lorries stopped all over the state with large suitcases full of money. That goes on, that oils the wheels of the machine. But if we take that at face value, these two parties are still offer a formidable challenge to the BJP, whether the BJP is pushing the message of governance or the quieter, softer message of Hindutva, because in a state like Tamil Nadu, it cannot afford to be extremely vociferous about it the way it can in the north.
Right. Yeah, that sets it up really interestingly. Just finally, we should touch on perhaps if there are any forces outside of the parties that we spoke about. Mr. Rajnikant didn't enter the fray eventually. But Kamal Haasan is there. He sort of made his debut in the 2019 Lok Sabha elections. Has there been any sort of growth in his political presence, from then till now?
Yeah, I mean, Kamal Haasan has certainly moved much farther forward than Rajnikant ever had. I think one had doubts about whether Rajnikant would take the step. So it was not really a surprise when he decided at the last minute he would pull out. I think in his case, his health, as well as the fact of the COVID-19 pandemic, as well as maybe his lack of financial backing from a deep party, a deep-pocketed party such as the BJP, all of those things culminated to kind of keep him out of it. Kamal Haasan went much further in terms of quickly articulating not only a party agenda, but then pulling together the Makkal Neethi Maiyam and being very clear about where on the political spectrum he stood. So I think people don't have even the level of doubt about him that they did in terms of Rajni's politics. But again, I think the 2019 election was a sort of an acid test which showed that he doesn't yet have anywhere close to the kind of statewide following that you would need to actually be a force that could tip the election one way or the other. And while we're talking about him, we shouldn't forget about the plethora of other parties, from all the other Dravidian parties, the PMK, the VCK, the Dalit Panthers, so many of the other parties, Seeman, there's so many of them who could, just chip away at small bits of the vote share, which could end up in the case of a much closer than predicted outcome. They could make quite a bit of a difference. And indeed, so could Kamal Haasan himself. If he ended up doing pretty well, maybe the same sort of credence that Tamil Nadu voters might think of the BJP in terms of good governance, they may prefer to go with a party like the Makkal Neethi Maiyam, because Kamal Haasan also talks about governance, but the big difference being he does not talk about Hindutva politics. So that could be a cocktail of political ideologies that appeals much more at the state level. So again, they may vote differently in terms of Makkal Neethi Maiyam in the state assembly than they did in the Lok Sabha election. So I think Tamil Nadu is also, while we have, like you correctly pointed out earlier, you've seen landslide victories for the DMK and the ADMK since the 90s at least, starting with people like GK Mupanar, the TMC, all of them. Every little party also played a little role on the scale, on the weighing scale, tipping it a little bit one way or the other and adding to the victor's spoils, or falling off the scale when they happen to ally with the losing party. So I think you're going to continue to see that. And so therefore, no analyst would be wise to discount all of these, the multitude of smaller actors and smaller parties. They're going to make a difference too.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a fascinating point. Some opinion polls have predicted a fairly clean sweep for the DMK. But it does sound like you are expecting a far more close contest.
Yeah, I would think so. Definitely.
Right. Narayan, we'll wrap it up there. And thank you so much for joining us for this discussion. It was a really fascinating sort of mix of politics and sociology and lots of other things. We'll probably get back to this topic when we get some projections, possibly to talk about results. And thank you so much for joining us today. This has been the Hindus in Focus podcast. Stay tuned for more, and we'll see you again soon.
In Focus will be back soon.
with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.